Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleOnyx Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, October 6th, 2024. And we're live and free for everyone today because it is the first of the month. Otherwise, this is for subscribers at patreon.com/WrestleOnyx. But today is a big episode because I'm going to tell you a story about a wrestling company. A wrestling company that was heading into its all-important media renewal negotiations. Those negotiations would dictate the financial future of the company for years to come. But there's always, in an exciting story, there's always a but. Going into this negotiation, there were serious concerns. There were issues. Many were questioning the company's leadership. Everyone had an opinion about the company's chief executive. Fans were turning away from the product. TV ratings were down. TV ratings in the demo were down. Attendance was down, both total and average. Merchandise sales, both at the venue and online, were down. Product licensing revenue even was down. But nonetheless, when the deal was announced, the company, the wrestling company, got a huge, huge increase in media rights fees. The name of this company, of course, is World Wrestling Entertainment. The year was 2018. And WWE, despite declining in popularity, consumer metrics, attendance, TV ratings, it more than tripled its domestic media rights fees from $131 million AAV for Raw and SmackDown to $470 million AAV for Raw and SmackDown across USA Network and Fox. But much like WWE in 2018, we finally have the news. The deal is finally finalized. With 3 months left on its current deal that ends at the very end of this year, Warner Brothers Discovery and AEW have come to an agreement. They have renewed most of the existing rights, except for Rampage. They have effectively made a deal for new rights that have not been monetized, at least domestically, before. This comes after a long and arduous process. I expected this deal to be done maybe, you know, the norm seems to be around 18 months ahead of the expiration of the deal. That would have put the timing around the middle of 2023. And consistent with that timing, but incorrect somehow, the wrestling media interpreted that a deal was going to be announced at WBD's Upfront last year in May, over a year ago. That event, though, only confirmed that Collision was a new show, as Kathleen Finch stood out on the stage. I forget what venue this was at in New York City, maybe the MSG Theater, I don't know. And the rumored, do you remember this? The rumored $200 million AAV deal that did not materialize. Although there was additional revenue, according to Tony Khan, from the addition of Collision, a second weekly touring television program brand. But nonetheless, no overall renewal of Dynamite or other rights. So the discourse and the agony and the agonizing discourse continued for an additional, I've counted them. You've come here for numbers and I've counted them. An additional 15 months until today. And like WWE in 2018, attendance is down, whether we're looking at Dynamite, whether we're looking at Collision. Attendance in the most recently completed quarter, Q3, Dynamite was down 21%. Collision was down 55%. I know part of that's because of the residency, but nonetheless, it is down. The market-to-market comparisons, the fairest way to evaluate, I think, live event attendance. Most of those comparisons are still negative. In Q3, 7-5. On the whole, in terms of a percentage, it's down about 7%. It's down about 9% in those comparisons, according to WrestleTix data. Meanwhile, WWE continues to be positive in those comparisons. Meanwhile, TV ratings continue to be down. Total viewership for Dynamite is down by about 16% on the year. Dynamite in the demo is down by about 17%, 16% and 17%. Those are negative values, and those are negative values that are worse than the rate of cord cutting, which I think is about 9%. We don't have access to Nielsen data to give you a very precise number, but we do get LRG research that tells us it's about 9%. And this is well worse than 9%. Collision also down by 26% and 33% in total viewership and the demo, worse than the rate of cord cutting. Rampage, down by 22% and 14% on the year, worse than the rate of cord cutting. Meanwhile, SmackDown, a little down by a single-digit 4%, or up still on the year in the demo. Raw, down also by 4% in total viewership, but up also by a single-digit of 4% in the demo. You get the idea. NXT is still up quite strongly as it has made its changeover from the USA Network to CW, and yes, we will speak about that today as well. And AEW in 2024, much like WWE in 2018, while its popularity has declined, the popularity of other products, including this time WWE, has declined. But what really mattered all along for WWE in 2018 was the rank. And as we can see here, as that deal neared for WWE in 2018, their viewership ranking, among other programming generally, in viewership, in this case in the demo, this data is extracted from Showbiz Daily via Nielsen. And their rank through 2016, 17, and 18, and into 19, was very strong, quite stable, among the top three, at worst, four programs on the day. And this is what has really mattered for AEW as well, as Dynamite has continued to be. Now, this Q3 is at number 9, but in all other quarters, you've seen a median rank of number 1 among daily cable primetime originals in 18.49, number 1, number 2, number 4, somewhere in that range for Dynamite, the flagship show with the most value. Collision has mostly been around the rank of number 2, number 4, number 3, although it did rank a median rank of 11 in this recently completed quarter. And Rampage, which seems to be going away, maybe, 15 in this most recently completed quarter, but, you know, in the top 10 in almost every other quarter. And Raw, SmackDown, and NXT have ranked strongly recently as well. So the ranking, despite attendance being down, despite TV ratings, the volume of viewership being down, even we can say it's worse than the rate of cord cutting. Yes, it is. But the ranking among other programming, especially in the case of Dynamite, has continued to be quite strong. And we can look again. Here's some charts here if you're watching a video. Just a one picture here of the decline in viewership for Dynamite, the decline in viewership in the demo for Dynamite, the decline in attendance in the 3 months of the year, or I'm sorry, in the first 9 months of each year, the decline in the average attendance in the first 9 months of each year. It's remarkably similar to the story of WWE heading into its renewal last cycle in 2018, a time at which Tony Khan evaluated that there was a business opportunity here, and maybe nobody better than him to act on that opportunity, given his access to at least two very important things: an immense amount of cash from his family and the connections that he has via the NFL to various television networks who are willing to take meetings, apparently, with somebody who's closely connected to an NFL franchise, as the NFL rules the world and opens every door imaginable in the media industry, apparently. And that led to talent getting signed, key talent who became EVPs. It led to a deal to put Dynamite on TNT, and of course later TBS and other programs. In any event, here's what we have here. What's the AAV? Let's all fight about it now. Come on, what's the real number? Is it 150 as Variety first reported? We'll go through all of what has been reported at this time. But we have this number that I'll put on the chart is 178. Why are you putting 178? I thought it was 185. So I'm going to put 178 on this chart because it is the median value of what Sports Business Journal has reported, 170, and the 185 that Variety and others have reported. So that's what we're going to use for today's math lesson, if you will. We'll get into later about what this AAV really is. I think it's mostly cash, but it's probably something else too. But like WWE in 2018, AEW has defied things like popularity, trends in ticket sales, which once dictated everything in the wrestling business, certainly in the 70s, the 80s, and into the 90s. You got to put butts in seats. It's nice to put butts in seats today in the 2020s. But what really matters is your rank among other television properties, which wrestling fans are not watching very closely. They're watching wrestling very closely, and they can see the pictures on social media that people post of empty seats, an entire side of the arena vacant. But that's not what really dictates the financial future of the biggest wrestling companies, at least those based in the United States. What dictates that is, I feel like I have to repeat myself here a lot today, so bear with me. What dictates your financial future among at least these two top wrestling companies in the United States and in the world is your ranking among other programming generally. How do you compare to The Challenge, to Fox News, to other live sports programming, which is highly viewed? WWE and AEW, oh yes, both of them, both sides, rank really well. And while they do, they will be quite valuable properties as long as the media industry continues to be what it is. What else can we say? Let's start to go through the timeline here. On Wednesday, we finally got this news. There were rumors and rumblings across the wrestling media ecosystem. There is a wrestling press that exists, and they were rumbling and bubbling. And then finally, Wednesday, 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, we get a report broken by Variety. All Elite Wrestling has officially signed a new multi-year, multimedia rights deal with Warner Brothers Discovery. Financial terms of the deal were not disclosed, but according to sources, the deal is valued at upwards. Don't dare say 150. It's upwards of $150 million per year. They would later amend that, I know. When all elements are taken into account is another interesting phrase being used there. Upwards of $150 million per year when all elements are taken into account. Dynamite and Collision will remain on their current networks, and this is a big deal, we're going to talk about this in depth, and will stream live on Max, not on Maxwell Jacob Freeman, on Max, the streaming service, simultaneously on the cable networks that they air on, beginning in January. Pay-per-views will be available on Max, also like a pay-per-view carrier in 2025, sometime in 2025. At a discounted price, presumably, I mean, currently the retail price in the United States is $50. Presumably, this will be some discount for the subscribers at Max of some lower value. I do not believe Max will be an exclusive carrier. I believe Triller will continue to carry pay-per-view digitally. Cable and satellite, I believe, will continue to carry pay-per-view for AEW as it has and other digital carriers. I think it's YouTube and PPV.com. Domestic carriers as well. I think they are. One of them is global as well. I think YouTube. Anyway, then we had 16 minutes later, flowing into my inbox, is a press release. Warner Brothers Discovery and AEW today announced a multi-year renewal of their highly successful five-year relationship, blah, blah, blah. Is there anything that interesting, that new in this press release? I don't think so. No, they don't confirm the number, of course, the AAV number, but they do confirm that there is a new announced a multi-year, so not naming the number of years, but the Observer, and then it does corroborate with the Puck report by John Orand that this would be a three-year deal with an additional one-year option for a maximum of 4 years, an expansive multi-platform media rights agreement that will provide fans with the widest available access ever to AEW's most popular programming. Okay, and we move on from there to the Hollywood Reporter. Also, just after 4 o'clock, they have quotes from Kathleen Finch, who says, "The benefit now to WBD is to introduce this terrific event." Huge wrestling fan, I bet, Kathleen Finch. "This terrific event to a streaming audience, the Max audience, which may not have been exposed to AEW in any great way until now, starting in January, is going to have it every Wednesday and Saturday night." So that signals that they're probably staying on their current weeknight, as well as the library available to stream, Finch adds. So that clues you into not only have Dynamite and Collision, where's Rampage? Not only have Dynamite and Collision been renewed to stay on their respective networks, TBS and TNT, not only are they going to simultaneously broadcast on the streaming service Max, but also the library is going to be available on Max. The library, what does that mean? I believe it means all of the TV episodes all the episodes of television, AEW television that have aired on TNT and TBS, I think will be there. I think Darks will continue to be available on YouTube. I think the pay-per-views might take longer to get there. So be prepared to rage tweet about that in January. If not, all the pay-per-views are there. They'll probably get there eventually, but maybe not at first. So the library. And I think that you'll get next day rights, essentially. If you don't have cable and you don't watch Dynamite or Collision Live, I think it'll be there for you the next day, maybe soon after, on Max, which is standard with what's going on generally in streaming. I think that's the gist of what I want to say there. Okay, and then we have Sports Business Journal, also on Wednesday, reporting that both AEW and WBD declined to share financial details behind the deal. However, sources say it is a three-year deal with an option for a fourth year. So there we have Sports Business Journal. You don't have to take the Observer's word for it or any other wrestling media's word for it. Sports Business Journal reporting a three-year deal with an option for a fourth year at $170 million annually, including the rights fee and other elements. Other elements. We talk about hydrogen, helium, oxygen, nitrogen, other elements. Anyway, it goes on. WBD also keeps its equity stake. What? It's equity stake. WBD also keeps its equity stake, but the size of it was not disclosed. Wait a minute. WBD can't own a stake in AEW. WBD is a publicly traded company. And if it's a publicly traded company, and that means any question that I can fathom in my brain about a publicly traded company, I have the right to know. That's actually not true. WBD is a very large company, and any publicly traded company is only required to disclose to the public the things that the SEC requires them to disclose to the public, which include quarterly financial statements and maybe anything else that is material. What's material? You know it when you see it. Material is not strictly defined, and a minority stake in AEW would probably not be material to a $19 billion. I know it's a diminished stock at this point, but a $19 billion company in the form of Warner Brothers Discovery, if they own a minority stake of AEW, which if you want to take the Forbes report at its word is a $2 billion company, if they own, I don't know, 10%, 20, 25% of this company, I don't think they have to disclose to you that they have a percentage of it. In any case, Tony Khan was asked about this just over a year ago, towards the end of September last year, on one of the many media calls. And let's listen to that clip and turn on our Tony Khan decoding radar.
I was just going to ask you, I mean, one of the big questions and one of the big rumors going around has to do with the ownership of the company and WBD. And is there any negotiations going on or anything to do they own a minority piece, or is there any negotiations going on in that direction?
Well, it's something we talked about a lot. There's been a lot of conversations about that. And it's, you know, it's always been something I've been open to. And, you know, between Warner Brothers Discovery and myself, a lot of the financial and structural details of our partnership we've been able to keep between us. But there are things I've always said to be true, that I own 100% of the voting stock in this company, and that I have 100% of the decision-making power in the company. And I've been open to taking on additional partnerships or things of that nature, but we have a really great deal right now with Warner Brothers Discovery, and I would love to have an even longer agreement. And as for them and their stake in the business, I mean, that is something that would be between us. But I would also be open to that, to Warner Brothers in a future deal, having a piece or a bigger piece potentially. But I would always want to maintain 100% voting control as I have now, and want to maintain, you know, the supermajority of stock, which I have now. So I think these are things that are really important to me. But in a future deal, I mean, these are things, you know, I would be open to. It's not, there's nothing bad about it. I mean, we've seen in pro wrestling this year a change of control. I have no interest in a change of control. Would I be interested in taking on additional investment? Yeah, potentially, but it would have to be at the right numbers, and it would have to make sense for us based on how much our business has grown this year. But as for a change of control or giving up any of the voting stock, no, I have no interest in that.
So what I think he's saying there is he has all of the voting power, and perhaps WBD has non-voting shares. So this is my reading of what Tony Khan is saying there. I believe he's saying, I have all of the voting shares. WBD has, I'm not going to explicitly say this, but he's making room for, WBD has some shares, but they're non-voting shares. And he's open to them having more in a potential deal. I don't know if they got more. What I believe, and why there is so much ambiguity about what this deal is worth. And by the way, let's point out, by Friday, Variety has updated its original report that said the average annual value was $150 million to say financial terms of the deal were not disclosed. But according to sources, the deal is valued at $185 million per year when all elements are taken into account. Again, Variety on Wednesday had reported that was $150 million per year, now reporting $185 million per year. Both reports ended that sentence with when all elements are taken into account. So what I think is happening here is WBD owns a minority stake in AEW. And think about like when they, I believe they owned that stake all along in the history of AEW going back to 2019. And I think, you know, the company was probably worth a lot less than it is now. And that stock that they had is now more valuable. Now it's completely speculative about what the shares in AEW would be worth, just as the shares of any company, just as the shares of Google and Apple and Microsoft are speculative. And because those companies are publicly traded companies, we see that speculative value change on a by minute, by second basis on the stock market. So here's one possible scenario about what might be happening here. This is not something I know to be true. This is something that I think is possible. I think it might be possible that WBD has had shares since 2018 in AEW. And as part of its compensation to AEW is going to sort of like stock compensation from a company to an executive is going to give AEW some of that stock back as compensation for their TV rights, for their various media rights, as part of their compensation. However, I believe that the vast majority of the compensation here is going to be guaranteed cash. And reasonable speculators can disagree to an extent, at least, about whether that's $170 million, $185 million when you take into account the variable and speculative value of AEW as a company. So I think that's a scenario that I think fits, at least insofar as I understand equity, that they may be, again, that they have, it's a good deal for them, right? They essentially, they got equity. They got an asset that was of a relatively low value at the beginning. And now 4 or 5 years later, it has grown in value without any cost to WBD sort of. And they are, I think, going to, again, this is just my possible scenario, and then they will compensate AEW partly in the form of equity in its own company. So, in a sense, Tony Khan or the Khan family would, in that scenario, become even more complete owners of AEW, and it would be a transfer of a non-cash asset that would not cost WBD much as much in that way. While I believe the vast majority of this deal will be guaranteed cash. Okay. And that's, again, that's why I think there is some disagreement here and confusion and ambiguity about what's the value of this deal. Is it, if we can find the slide here where I've got all the, is it $170 million? Is it $180 million per year? It depends on what you think the value of the equity of a given share of AEW is worth. And reasonable people can certainly disagree about what the equity of that of AEW as a company should be valued at. Okay. We're going to get back to AEW in a second. but we're going to talk briefly about bad blood. By the way, patreon.com/WrestleNomics. If you want to listen to this podcast every week, every Sunday we do this, but only on the first Sunday of the month is it free for everyone. Every other week I do it, and it's for subscribers. Only $5 a month. That gets you access to TV ratings reports that I do every day. It gets you access to the quarter hour reports that I do. It gets you access to the monthly reports, including the merchandise report, including the live events, market to market report. A lot of people talk a lot of stuff about wrestling, and I don't think it's always tightly tied to reality and facts and data. This is. You also get access to these slides that I go through every single week. And if you want to pay $10 a month, you get access to some of the big spreadsheets I have. And you can read more about that at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. Bad Blood happened last night. It set a new arena gate record. Not a global gate record for WWE, but a U.S. gate record. So something well over $2 million in a gate, probably approaching $3 million maybe. Paul Levesque came out and said that it was a new gate record. He later corrected himself and said it was a new arena gate record for the U.S. as opposed to a new arena gate record internationally. That record has been set a number of times consecutively. Basically every international PLE that they have been doing has been breaking that record. Most recently, Bash in Berlin. In Berlin, Germany. Not much else to say about Bad Blood. There were presenting sponsors of Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm, as well as Wendy's. So if you need, if you've been injured and you need to sue somebody, Morgan & Morgan's got your back there. Prime Energy, of course, was on the canvas. We also had, I can confirm, this was not Saturday Night Live. It is back with its new season. This was not a segment from Saturday Night Live, though. This was, in fact, Paul Levesque answering a question in the press conference related to the appearance and representation of black wrestlers on PLEs. And we'll listen to that now.
Regarding the representation of black male wrestlers within WWE, they haven't been on a PLE in the last three cards. There was no black male wrestlers on the Bad Blood card. How do you gauge between making sure that there's representation and making sure that there are wrestlers that get opportunities that are deserved?
I see everybody gets the opportunity. Like if I don't see the difference in anybody, I don't see the color. I don't see the nationality. I don't see any of it. I just see talent. I don't see the difference between men and women. I see talent. We tell stories with those talent, how they can handle those stories and how they can represent those stories and how we can bring those stories forward. So, you know, I don't keep track of any of that. I do what's relevant and what is best in the best in storytelling and what's being delivered the best. And then that's what goes. No different than, you know, the men and the women who main events, whatever, whatever the biggest stories are, that's where we go.
Next question.
As Stephen Colbert said once, I don't see color. People tell me I'm white and I believe them because police officers call me sir. Anyway, that's all for Bad Blood. We'll get back to the crisis around AEW and your AEW anxiety. What I want to focus on here, now we've gone over the facts, I want to talk about some analysis and what I think is a really important issue with this deal, something this deal will do that I don't know if people have talked about very much, but I think it's really important to emphasize. As the slide says, I'm going to read the slide. I know that's bad, but I'm going to read the slide. This deal is about coverage. This deal is about money, of course. But you know what it's also about? It's about reach. It's about how many people can you reach? How many people are possibly going to watch your show? What are you talking about? Think about this in the context of WWE, and it's an argument that I've raised a number of times, that WWE has really benefited from an increase in the reach of certain content that it has. In 2014, a couple of years following 2014, I assessed that WWE benefited in a lot of its popularity metrics, its ticket sales, merchandise sales increased because the WWE network caused people to engage more with WWE content and watch the pay-per-views that you used to have to pay $60 to view. It put that in a lot more homes, in front of a lot more eyeballs and people that are connected to eyeballs, and it expanded the audience, it increased engagement. That had downstream positive effects for WWE. When SmackDown went to Fox, one of the speculated benefits was that it was going to go on a network that had greater household coverage than just your standard cable networks like USA Network. And so that started in late 2019. The pandemic happened shortly after that. WWE at that time was on a multi-year decline in ticket sales, merchandise sales, product licensing revenue, TV ratings. So Fox didn't have that much of a benefit, in my view, and clearly that relationship did not last beyond 1 5-year term. In any case, then WWE sold the rights that were the rights to the content that were on the WWE network in the United States to Peacock, and Peacock has even greater reach than the WWE network did. In the U.S., there were about 1.2, maybe 1.3 at best, WWE network subscribers in the United States. Peacock, as it stands today, somewhere, what is it? I'd have to look. I forget what they announced in their most recent report, but early in this deal, they had 20 million subscribers. Again, 1.3, 20 million subscribers. Now, you're not going to see proportionate increases in viewership to whatever that is, 20 times more viewership of the pay-per-views because they were on Peacock. No, but you did see more. They were up by 50% or whatever percentage deltas they were telling investors on all the earnings calls that we listened to. Viewership of those events was up, and that is one component, among others, that helped, in my view, WWE stabilize the decline in popularity beginning when those started in March of 2021. Eventually, Vince McMahon was removed from creative because of his various resignations, and the content improved, and that caused the popularity, the ticket sales, the merchandise sales, the engagement, the TV ratings to improve even more. But the Peacock, getting those events into even more homes, had some significant downstream benefits. So WWE Network in 2014 increased the reach of the pay-per-views. Peacock in 2021 increased the reach of the pay-per-views even more, and these had positive effects for WWE. One of the big hopes is that when WWE gets Raw onto Netflix and the rest of the content onto Netflix globally, that's going to have a huge benefit because Netflix is by far the biggest streaming service in all of the world in the United States. It's in about the same number of homes as cable networks are now in the United States. So it's a really powerful platform, and theoretically, Netflix is going to promote it hard and put it on the screen right in your face so you don't miss it, and that's going to maybe result in more people engaging with, watching WWE content. And see, I think another reason why it's important for NXT to be on CW is because it's in a broadcast network. WWE was leaving Fox, a broadcast network, and I think it's important to them that they are in, that they have, you know, three strong footholds in these three major transmission avenues, if you will, these three major media, which are cable, the traditional one that wrestling has been on the last few decades, cable, but also broadcast, even bigger, and now this new thing, streaming. And Netflix is the best one to possibly be on. So just to get some numbers on the table here, how many households are there in the United States? There are about 130 million households in the United States, about 130 homes. How many of them have TVs in them? Most of them, about 97% of them. About 126 million homes that have TV in them. Only 3% of homes are smart enough to not put a television in their home. So 126 million homes. How many of those homes have TBS and TNT? How many of those homes can even watch Dynamite and Collision? About 66 million is, I don't have like the latest coverage numbers, but what I do have is some coverage ratings data. This is, you don't want to know this, but I have some coverage ratings data, and I've extrapolated. This is about the number of homes that these networks are in at this point. The latest data I have on this is December 2023, and this makes sense. It's slightly down from December 2023. TBS and TNT are in about 66 million homes. So that's like half. It's roughly half of all U.S. TV households, right? This is not surprising to you. You know the cord cutting is happening at an accelerating rate. Okay, so why it's important that AEW is getting onto the Max streaming service is how many? Okay, here's a question: how many subscribers does Max even have, though? Well, if you look at WBD's investor relations website and you look at the PDF, you go into the trending schedules, you'll see that they have this table. In usual light blue striped format, they have this table that says global max subscribers. We're not interested in global, though. We're interested in the U.S. for our purposes at the moment. We're interested in this line right here that says domestic subscribers. And over here, this is the latest number that they've given. Well, they'll update this pretty soon, actually. But the latest number that they have is June 30th of this year. Domestic subscribers of what they call Max, HBO Max, HBO, and Discovery Plus. That number is 52 million, 52.4 million. But that includes traditional HBO, that includes Discovery Plus, and it includes Max, which is what we're interested in here. There's a report at the time that these services, at the time that HBO Max and Discovery Plus kind of merged, there was a report that there were 4 million Discovery subscribers that were, you know, unique and separate from HBO Max. So let's subtract that out of this 52.4 million number. We get about 48 million at that point, 48.4 million. And I believe there's about half. So the question is, how many Max subscribers, let's say if there are in the United States about 48 million Max subscribers, 48 million Max subscribers in the United States, how many of those, though, don't also have cable? And they might just have Max because they're traditional old people with HBO, you know, access. About, let's say, half of those are actual non-cable homes that don't already have access to TBS and TNT. By that math, we get 24 million extra households to stack on top of what? To stack on top of the household coverage that TBS and TNT have, which gives us what? What's 24 plus 65? Let's go with 65 to be conservative here, right? And this is going to continue to decline over time in all likelihood as cable coverage has continued to. So we get 24 plus 65 is, by my sources tell me that is 89 million households. So we go from covering about 51% of the United States household TV households, about 51% of the country, to 71% of the country. That's really important. It's really important that you've got only about half of the country right now, if they wanted to. Well, if they wanted to bad enough, I guess they could sign up for cable. But anyway, if they wanted to, without spending any extra money that they're not already spending, only about half the country can watch Dynamite or Collision or Rampage without signing up for cable. But now, well, in January, 71% of the population will be able to access Dynamite or Collision if they have the whim to do so. Now we'll get on. But I haven't even mentioned Shockwave. And is it going to go to Fox? Oh, my God. Maybe. I don't know. But here's why it's important for AW, if it can, get on a broadcast network of some kind. If we assume that broadcast TV, the broadcast networks that we're going to mention here, are available in virtually all homes via an over-the-air antenna. But we're going to keep in mind how many people actually use over-the-air antennas. Weird people like me do. So how many people in the United States how many households in the United States are actually using over-the-air antennas? 18 million. About 18 million who don't also have cable. 18 million. Now that's from Nielsen. Okay. So how many of those, though, are not also Max subscribers, I guess, would be the question there. And don't I have a slide for this? I do. And what we get is, you know, we get, let's say, half of those 18 million aren't also Max subscribers. Well, we could get 9 million extra homes to add on to the 65 million from cable, to add on to the incremental, let's say, 24 million from Max. And we get to add an extra 9 million if AEW makes a deal to put content on some kind of broadcast network like Fox. And then you get up to 98 million households. And then you're up to 78% of the country covered when you started out at the moment right now with about 51% of the country. So that's important. And that can have these downstream effects that I think are demonstrated have benefited WWE, and WWE certainly hopes it will benefit them in the form of Netflix being the live content on Netflix. I think that that just to lay this out, it's this Shockwave program, which which AEW has filed a trademark for. They are applying for a trademark for AEW Shockwave, which is clearly a pro wrestling program of some sort. I believe they are talking to Fox about this. And I don't believe this is for cable. I don't believe this is FS1. I was skeptical, but I was skeptical that they would get on Fox. But sources have indicated that they are pursuing broadcast and probably not another cable network. because they're already on cable. And the goal here, the objective, whether it works out or not, you can be skeptical of. But the objective is to get on broadcast for the purpose of widening the reach. Will NFL owners open all doors and make this deal happen or not? You can decide for yourself. So what do we know here? 3-year deal, 1-year additional option, 4 years maximum on this deal. And then you can speculate about whether AEW will die at the end of that deal. We'll go through this cycle all over again. I think I've said everything here. Fox seems most likely, if we're thinking about what's, and I think it is going to be AEW Shockwave. I think it's most likely that Rampage will just go away. I think that's probably the best thing to do anyway. The Rampage brand has clearly been defined as the least important of the three TV brands. Probably best to just start over from scratch. Our partner is going to shock the world because he is none other than the Shockwave. are there other broadcast networks that are conceivable? NBC, probably not. They're deeply involved with WWE. They're going to be broadcasting Saturday night's main event. ABC, probably not. They're going to be, they're involved with UFC, at least ESPN is. And I think there is sometimes some UFC on ABC. CW just debuted NXT, probably not. But that does leave Fox and I guess Paramount, CBS. We'll see what happens there. But I think we're probably going to be in a future sometime next year where there's Dynamite and Collision being taped on one weekday, live on Wednesday probably. And then there's another tape day where Shockwave is taped and whatever other ancillary things need to be taped, like Ring of Honor. And here's the math that I've been skeptical of in recent weeks and months. As you know, look at the deal that NXT got. NXT on CW is getting $25 million a year. That's what WrestleNomics has reported last year after this deal was made. They were getting $15 million from NBCU to be on the USA Network each year with no escalators. Now getting $25 million. Ari Emanuel said it was a 70% increase. That puts it at about $25 million, maybe a little higher. And it was really hard to make the math work on a deal being worth as much as $170 million a year for AEW or $185 million a year for AEW, unless you give them the value per viewer hour of Raw, which is in total viewership about $1.50. In the demo is about $3.67. What are you talking about? How can I explain this well in audio? Basically, it's the answer to the question, what are these networks paying for each hour that they cause you to watch their show? They cause you to watch their show. How much is the network paying the wrestling company because of that for each hour that you watch their show? And the answer, if we're looking at all people of all ages for Raw, is about $1.50. The answer, if you're one of those special people between the ages of 18 to 49, which most of you probably are, your eyeballs are so much more valuable. Your eyeballs are so valuable. Then they're paying you about the $3.67, $3.02. And that has turned out to be very, very close to the rate that AEW is getting based on, we're using, again, our median 178 between 170 and 185. They basically got paid based on their viewership, adjusting for their significantly lower viewership and the number of hours that they're delivering per week, excluding preemptions. They're getting paid at about the same rate for their viewers, for their volume of viewers as Raw. They're not getting paid the same money. That's not what I'm saying. Calm down. They're not getting paid the same amount of money as Raw. Certainly not. But based on the number of viewers that they're delivering, they are. They're getting paid proportionately to that. Raw, I believe, is getting about 300 and just Raw alone on Netflix in the United States, let alone the rest of the world. I think that's $500 million per year. But just the Raw portion of that, I believe, is about $345 million per year for Raw in the United States on Netflix. So don't worry, WWE is way, way, way ahead of everybody in the world, including AEW, in terms of media rights, because they not only have Raw on Netflix, but they have Netflix around the world coming up next year. They have SmackDown on USA, which is way more than this AEW deal is. Don't worry, don't get insecure. They also have 200. You left out on Twitter that W Network deal on Peacock. That's another $200 million. That's going to get renewed in the next couple of years because that deal expires in 2026. And they have another $25 million for NXT on CW. So don't worry. WWE is by far the leader. What I think is really interesting here, something important to take away, is no Ring of Honor to speak of here whatsoever, despite Tony Khan's willingness, apparently, in a press conference in July, to rebrand Ring of Honor to AEW Ring of Honor. No news of that here. Something could happen in the future, but looks like that's going to continue to be a show that happens on Honor Club for its dozen subscribers, 12,000 subscribers or whatever it is that they have. And what I think is interesting here, too, is clearly Max is going to establish the pay-per-view, the upcharge technology on their streaming platform, which is very much like the pay-per-view transactions that happen on ESPN Plus. You have to be a subscriber and then you pay an upcharge within the streaming platform for UFC pay-per-views. And UFC pay-per-views are coming up for renewal I believe at the end of next year. So they're coming up for renegotiation now. And that sets up Max as being maybe ready to do what ESPN Plus does and maybe bid for those rights and compete with those rights for ESPN Plus. That's good news for UFC. That's good news for TKO because you want as many interested bidders bidding strongly for your rights. So this news is good news for TKO, in fact, in this respect. Okay. That's all I've got to yell about for now before we go to your questions and answers.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make high-quality clothing for a summer wardrobe you'll love, all made right here in the USA. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
We're going to go to all the questions and answers that I've received. Well, the questions that I've received, I will provide the answers. The questions that I've received about the AEW deal, which of course are a few. I'll do the AEW questions here, and then we'll discuss NXT on CW and its successful premiere. But let's go to the AEW questions that everyone is just pressed with anxiety to inquire about. And here we have Ben B. He asks, "Hi, Brandon. I wanted to ask, how concerned are you?" I'm very concerned. "How concerned are you about the wrestling/TV industry? How the wrestling/TV industry is changing to one where TV ratings are a much more rare data point we get? AEW streaming on Max, WWE on Netflix. Next year, we might not have comparable TV ratings anymore. As someone whose job is partly dependent on business metrics being available, how much are you/WrestleNomics personally impacted by this challenging situation?" So let's answer that first because there's a couple more questions here. I'm prepared to do whatever. Look, I'm really dedicated to growing the WrestleNomics business, but if we don't have TV ratings for Raw we might not have TV ratings at all for Raw or Nielsen will pick this up and start reporting ratings. And if Nielsen subscribers get them, I expect I'll get them. I really have no idea what's going to happen. We're only a few months away from this time where this is all going to start. I don't know what's going to happen. I will continue to ask Netflix. I've asked Netflix in the past and got no response from their PR about whether there's going to be Nielsen tracking of this, like there has been for traditional telecasts, like there has been for NFL on streaming. I don't know that this is going to happen. So, but if there's no data, I'll continue to report the data that we have with, you know, noting all the caveats that will need to be noted. In the case of Dynamite and Collision, presumably if we're just looking at TNT and TBS, those ratings are going to be lower if people are opting to watch it on Max instead. I imagine there's going to be some cannibalization. There'll probably be a bigger audience, at least immediately at first. But they'll probably be lower just because some people will find it more convenient to turn on Max and watch the live stream there than through cable. And we'll continue to do it. Look, I am less concerned. I have a day job in addition to WrestleNomics, and I'm not that. If our business doesn't succeed, I'll live. Do you have plans to replace that reporting with other metrics? Not really. I'm not going to do like Google Trends guesswork or something like that. I will either get the data from Nielsen or through some other legitimate means or not. We have now, what I'll say here, especially for people who are, you know, who are listening, who aren't subscribers. We do our reports every week, and we include not only in our show reports, the TV ratings, but we also include analysis and comparisons of the WrestleTix attendance data for that given show in the arena that it's in. We also do comparisons of the YouTube data. So we have all of the YouTube videos and their views at that time, comparing all of those, which I think is sort of like, it's a similar to a quarter hour analysis, but we also report the quarter hours as well. And we even do at the very bottom. Okay. It's at the bottom. We do the cage match ratings as well, comparing the event rating, and here's all the match ratings if you care about that. We'll continue to do stuff like that. And if we have to do a show report for a Raw that doesn't include a TV rating, I suppose that's what we'll do. I'll note too that, you know, as we noticed with the Mr. McMahon documentary that made the top three in the United States, top four worldwide this past week, it's possible that if nothing else, Raw will appear on those lists. You would think Netflix would, especially if Raw is a great success, they would want to publicize that engagement in some form. Do you think the wrestling industry will be better off without these comparisons / rating wars? I think it will barely impact the actual wrestling industry. If what you mean, will this impact these social media spheres that we may visit from time to time? I guess if there's less information for people to make petty arguments with, that might ease some of the tensions. But I think, you know, does online discourse really impact the business? Very, very slightly. Thanks, Ben. Next question. Billy P says, "Hi, Brandon. I've noticed that overruns can often end up hurting ratings of wrestling shows. I was curious if people using DVRs to record shows would have their recording end at the scheduled time instead of whatever time the overrun ends at, and if that could affect ratings in a small negative way." I don't know. I've been a Sling subscriber. We're actually here in the WrestleNomics business. We're switching over to YouTube Live because of the CW move, so we're able to DVR NXT for quarter hours purposes. But with Sling, what will happen, at least for me, and I don't know if other people have different experiences, what will happen for me is any of these shows, it has it will take 30 minutes more than we need. So we've never missed any of that, except for this week when this enormous overrun happened and this half hour, 31 minute overrun on Dynamite. For whatever reason, Sling just cut out 15 minutes of the overrun. But anyway, we got it on YouTube TV Live, though. Don't worry. So I did look this up and say, so to answer your question, if this is your question, how much did the overrun actually improve the overall rating average? And the answer is very slightly, and it's not always positive. For Collision this year, I looked at all the episodes that had overruns, and eyeball average looks to be, it's a 0% difference. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it doesn't change it that much. In the case of Dynamite, we have many cases where, at worst, it hurt the average by 2% at the very worst. At the very best, it improved the average by 1%. Yes, I'm including weighted averages in this, because the quarter hours are different durations, so you should be doing a weighted average rather than a straightforward average. Math nerds, don't DM me. And then NXT has the most overruns since 2022. And again, it's similar, maybe a little more volatile. But again, I think, can I even find a 3% absolute value here? No. I don't know that I even see a 2%. Oh, we do see a 2% here on September 6, 2022. We do see a 2% positive difference. The point is, I think this matters very little. What's the point of an overrun? To help your content provider, wrestling company, have a more exciting show, maybe. Does it really improve? Is there some purpose in let's make the rating a little bit higher? I've heard people say that. It's not having a big effect. So if that's the purpose, it's not strongly succeeding in that regard. Is that helping ad rates? I doubt it. I don't know. Then Dave B says, "Brandon, I need a best guess on 2024. Oh, here is the question. I want a best guess on 2024 AEW financials, considering the massive increase in payroll, pay-per-view costs, because more pay-per-views equals more costs, and the 25 to 30% decrease in attendance. Dave B. says, I have zero faith that the New Deal makes them profitable, much less $65 million profitable in 2025, and even ignoring the $100 million cumulatively lost so far. We have a few other questions along these lines, which I will just now read together. Daryl F. says, I know we always talk about how much each company is making on TV deals, but for us to know how much they really make, we need to know how much they spend. Like, how much does WWE and AEW spend for a whole year? Can we take what we know WWE to spend for the whole year and use that to figure out what AEW might have to spend? Then can we compare that to the money they're supposed to make? And we have a third question related to this. Darren C. says, hello, Brandon. With AEW's new TV deal announced, Dave Meltzer has claimed that AEW will now be making profits of $60 million to $70 million each year. Dave has clearly taken the negative $30 million from 2023 and added the new TV deal. With AEW's wage bill increasing each week and live attendance and merchandise down, do you expect AEW to be making a profit anywhere near the numbers that Dave has stated? And this is the question that many people's lives depend on, is AEW profitable? I have sunk all of this emotional investment into this question over the last 4 years. So many people have. I've done AEW financial estimates in the past, is I think partly what everyone here is getting at, right? And I've estimated revenue is fairly easy. Let's explain. Revenue is easier to estimate because we have things like WrestleTix to give us something to work with about ticket sales. We have some reports about what these media deals are worth. We can make certain estimates based for like venue merch based on what we know to be like the $12 to $15 dollar spend per capita, maybe higher for pay-per-views. We know that, you know, AEW has certain deals for video games because those video games exist. We know that there's other licenses like action figures and trading cards, and we can try to plug in what we think those values might be. We know there's international TV deals because their TV is distributed in other countries. So there at least are these public things to see and then try to come up with a revenue estimate about. So I've estimated last year, $154 million revenue. That's just in my brain. That's what I estimated for the year of 2023. And I took a stab at their profitability. And to estimate the profitability, you have to estimate what their expenses are, which is more difficult to do. But I took a shot at it, and I estimated that their expenses left them with a net loss of, what was it, $34 million? In losses. And I'm sure AEW has not been, I'm pretty confident that AEW has not been profitable in any year. I think there were reports or chatter that in 2020, because expenses were so low because of COVID and not having to tour, which is very expensive, not having to tour with a whole production rig and crew, that was a big cost savings for them. And they lost no revenue because they continued to produce TV and were continued to be paid by their TV partners. So with all that said, I thought about doing a financial estimate today, but I knew that if I did it, it would be rushed and I would have to like edit it later. But let me say this. So Daryl's question about using WWE's business to model what their expenses are. I did do that in my 2023 estimate where for part of estimating the expenses, I assumed I itemized media and event expenses based on the number of events that they ran, based on what I believe that the average cost is for running those events. But anyway, I used WWE's ratio of revenue to expense to estimate what their consumer products operating cost was, to estimate what their general and administrative cost was, to estimate what their marketing and selling expense was. So I did do that in 2023, and I would probably do that in future years' estimates. So I'll read you actually what I wrote on Thursday, and I guess I will say too. I will read you the AEW is AEW profitable section of a report that I did on Thursday. AEW isn't a public company. This is important to note, too. So it has no obligation, like WWE does, to disclose their finances. So we may never be able to verify it. I could estimate, and to spoil this, I'm going to tell you, it's going to be very difficult for this company to not be profitable in the immediate future years. But we may never be able to verify that unless AEW goes public or something. But the answer is most likely, are they profitable? Yes. Are they going to become profitable? Are they profitable now? No, probably not. Almost certainly not. Are they going to become profitable? Probably yes. So if we conservatively assess the incremental value alone, this year I estimate that AEW will generate around $90 million related to domestic media rights. That's from WBD. And I think that's going to total about half of the revenue for this year of 2024. And we have to make various assumptions going forward to estimate their expenses. So I wrote this based on the notion that, not that they're getting $185 million per year on an average annual value basis, not that they're getting $170, but based on the really conservative notion that they're getting $150, and based on the notion that they're going to get $0 for any additional deal that they might or might not get from Fox. So what else did I write here? AEW could be generating domestic revenue in the future with this new deal at a cadence shown above, which have I included in here? I don't know if I included it in here, but they're going to generate estimated revenue at a cadence of starting around $134 million in this very conservative estimate in 2025 to $166 million in 2028. And you keep in mind that this is domestic TV revenue only, not including international media revenue from partners like Bell Media, right, in Canada, Eurosport Discovery in India, ITV in the UK. So it's not including that. It's not including pay-per-view sales, which I don't think are part of this deal. I think they're going to continue to split this like they did with BR and like they do with other carriers, and other revenue sources like tickets, even though they're declining, merchandise sales, which are probably declining, and other consumer products and licenses like their action figures, video games, trading cards, etc. So importantly, that would represent additional revenue compared to this year, which is $90 million in domestic media revenue, ranging from $44 million to $76 million per year. In my attempt to estimate AEW's profitability in 2023, I estimated a net loss of $34 million. Estimating AEW's revenue is one thing. There are public metrics, et cetera, et cetera. Estimating expenses are more difficult, but if my $34 million net loss for estimate for 2023 is in the ballpark, you could include that the greater incremental revenues of $44 million to $76 million each year, this is math, yes, that would be enough to offset those all company expenses, providing, here's your escape hatch, providing all of the revenues remain stable. That's what I wrote on Thursday. That's before Variety updated its report on the AAV, moving it from 150 to 185. That's before, on Friday, AEW filed a written declaration from one Chris Harrington, which, yes, full disclosure, Chris Harrington used to co-host this podcast. He stopped co-hosting this podcast with me in 2018 when he went to go work for AEW. This disclosure where he writes here under, I assume, penalty of perjury here. This is a written declaration in a federal case. This is the Kevin Kelly and Tate Twins case, where they're alleging defamation and they're alleging misclassification, breach of contract, among other things. And he writes in here, from September 1, 2022 to the present, so just over a 2-year period, AEW paid the class members, which is all of their wrestling talent, $60 million in aggregate. $60 million over 2 years, which is a lot lower than what I had baked into my earlier estimates, where I estimated that AEW was losing $34 million last year. So that was before the... what now we have another major media outlet reporting $185 million. It's before I now have to believe that their talent costs are lower than I thought they were. And this assumes that they're going to get $0 in additional revenue from any additional TV deal, such as Fox, if they get any deal. We have other things to say here. Long story short, it's going to be very difficult for AEW to not be profitable going forward. I'm sorry to tell people who may not like AEW, who may have invested a lot of been rooting against AEW, maybe, you know, deeply involved in that world. But I don't think it's going to be very hard for them to not be profitable just because of the media revenue, because of what's now been said about their talent costs. Next question from Troy C. Troy C says, from the opposite end of the spectrum here, from some of our earlier questions, how important is it for AEW to turn a profit now that they have their new deal? It's not like TK needs the money. Do you see AEW investing most of their revenue with a goal to break even? He's got more here. We'll get to that in a moment. If AEW, for one thing, if AEW has other investors like WBD, I would say it's pretty important for them to appease those investors and make money. You can come up with your own stories and narratives about, like, you know, well, Shad Khan's such a billionaire. What does it matter if they make money or not? Okay, then it's less a business and more of an activity of consumption. But I would think it's important to them to not just have fun, but to actually run a profitable and successful business. But who knows? Also, Troy writes, you can leave this out of the show if you want. No, I'm leaving it in. But you mentioned TK putting himself over between Dynamite and Rampage tapings in Buffalo. And that's not only in Buffalo he does this. He does this at every taping, I believe. Have you ever been to an AEW show? But anyway, was that really a big deal or an ego stroke? I see him as a guy saying hello to the fans, making dorky Time Cop references and helping them kill time while setting up the ring. The alternative is to do nothing and have fans potentially get bored and leave after Dynamite, which many of them do anyway. Troy goes on. Now, Triple H, that's a guy that likes to get himself on television and put himself over, as mentioned, on television in sacrifice of other performers. Just saying. Thanks for your time. Thanks, Troy. It is true that someone came to the ring last night in Atlanta and announced that there is a great gate and there's great live event business. What I've discussed in the past about Tony is he does that before the show. He comes out before the live crowd, before the show, in between the show, in between the tapings, and then at the pay-per-views, he sits next to all of the talent, which Paul Levesque does not do, and Paul Levesque does not come out at every show. Before the show and between the show. Sometimes he does come out on CW, on pay-per-views. He does do that. The issue I'm raising is that all those things combined, in Tony's case, I think encourage some of the criticism and stereotypes that people apply to him as somebody who's a billionaire son who's, you know, just having fun and having the most expensive fan experience possible. Okay. And I think those are all the AEW questions for now. If you want to send a question in for next week, if you're a subscriber, I guess, Brandon@WrestleNomics.com is the email. Moving to last Tuesday, here's the news from Brian Stelter. Sorry, he used to be from CNN, right? I don't know what maybe he's still with CNN. I don't know. There was a vice presidential debate on Tuesday between Tim Walz and JD Vance, where they had a, at times, cordial conversation. In any case, that did go head-to-head with the debut of NXT on the CW. Nonetheless, this was a seems to be a successful debut. CW and AW, CW and WWE sent out this press release highlighting that CW Network delivers largest audience for NXT since October 2023, so higher than any broadcast that they did on USA Network in about a year, probably for a Halloween Havoc episode. This was a 0.26 in the demo, so almost double the next highest telecast on CW year to date, which was the 29th annual Critics' Choice Awards. It did 895,000 subscribers, 895,000 viewers, which is the third highest in total viewership year to date. And certainly, like, these other telecasts are probably not weekly telecasts. The awards show, the NASCAR Xfinity race. So it'll probably go down for me here, but this is a pretty strong number to start off with. And it seems to encourage me in my belief that they're going to do similar ratings probably to what they did on the USA Network here. In terms of things that are only on Tuesday, compare this to what, if they hadn't debuted NXT on this Tuesday, what might have been in its place. more than anything have been episodes of The Conners, which I think is like the Roseanne show without Roseanne, right? And that had been doing on average a 0.05 demo rating, 355,000 viewers. And this is doing, again, this NXT episode did a 0.26. It'll do a lower rating in subsequent weeks, I think. But it's going to do probably still multiple times better than whatever the replacement programming would be. So this is probably going to really benefit, at least in terms of viewership volume, it's going to really benefit CW. Are they going to get the return on investment? This seems to be a pretty cheap deal that they got here. So here's a question about this from Delmar, who weighs in and says, "Hey, Brandon, while CW is in 71 million homes versus USA Network 68 million, I'm not sure where he's getting these numbers from. These are in the ballpark. I did hear some outcry slash frustration with many, including former WWE star Peyton Royce, tweeting that they couldn't find their local CW affiliate when wanting to watch NXT. I'm assuming CW slash Nexstar, which is its parent company, have multiple carriage disputes with Dish Network, DirecTV, and MVPDs, but it's likely depending on the market you're in. The NXT number would suggest many found the channel, but I do wonder, depending on where NXT channels level off, where NXT levels off at, if this hurts them, or perhaps they replace some of the existing audience on USA with a new one. But availability certainly is important, and this wasn't an issue with USA Network. I did some looking into this. I mean, you can go right on CW's website and type in your zip code. I looked up like what's a zip code for Orlando, which a lot of wrestlers live in. This is a random zip code in Orlando, and they're on. This is over the air. I looked up coverage, disputes involving CW, and did some Googling on that, if they're having any disputes with carriers, and I could not find any concerning Nexstar. So I think this is slightly superior coverage to what they're getting on USA. Now, if everybody can find it on their dial, that's another question. But I do think they are getting some incremental, as you pointed out, they are getting some incremental households here because of over-the-air antenna weirdos like me. So another question from Andy H., who writes, "With all the rumors that USA is negotiating with WWE to extend SmackDown to 3 hours, why didn't they just keep Raw? If you're going to have a 3-hour primetime show on your channel, wouldn't you prefer that to be on a Monday versus a Friday? Does a 3-hour SmackDown stand to have a lower cost for USA than a Raw renewal would have?" I don't know. So it's $285 for SmackDown is what they're paying. $285 million. We would have to know things we don't know the answer to. Like, what would it have cost them to renew? I guess we kind of know that. What would it have cost them to renew Raw? Well, Netflix, I got it for, I believe, about $345 million. So it is cheaper, and maybe being on Friday versus Monday is not a difference enough in the value of the viewership or other value that's delivering to make up for that difference in monetary value. The question is, though, are they going to get additional payment if they expand to 3 hours? That may be something that's being negotiated here. I would think we're not going to see what's going to happen with that until it's clear what the deal is going to be with the duration on Netflix. Paul Levesque was asked last night, and he said, "When I know, I'll let you know." So I imagine something that with Netflix, they're going to experiment with the duration of Raw. Maybe it'll be 3 hours sometimes, maybe it'll be 2.5 sometimes, maybe it'll be 3.5 sometimes, I don't know. Maybe it'll be a slight overrun, essentially. But they won't be beholden to the rigid time slots. I would think, if money is an issue, then I would think that NBC is not going to pay, they're not going to pay what Raw would have cost, especially given that, as you point out, it's on Friday with lower viewership. Is this a word salad that I just said? I think my answer is NBC is probably views this, regardless of what they're going to do, as a more efficient purchase on their part than renewing Raw at what it would have cost them to renew Raw, which presumably would have been the neighborhood of $345 million, versus renewing SmackDown for $287, even if they end up paying more for SmackDown in some amended agreement because they expand the number of hours, or maybe they won't. Maybe there'll only be a slight difference in the exchange here. This is just, I don't know, thinking it through, I would imagine that they're going to do what's most cost effective for them in their view. Okay. Again, if you want to send questions for next week, Brandon@WrestleNomics.com. Go to patreon.com/WrestleNomics and subscribe if you haven't already to listen to this next week. Are we at the end of the slides? We are. And the TV ratings reports, the show reports, again, with all of the ratings, attendance, YouTube, and cage match information that you can stand for each episode of every major WWE and AEW weekly program. The merchandise report that we didn't even discuss today is up there for subscribers. Now you get access to these slides. Data subscribers get access to the spreadsheets with all the TV ratings and the quarter hour data and the YouTube view data for the last couple of years. And the TV ratings data goes back to not the quarter hour data, but the whole show TV ratings data goes back to late 2014. Is that everything? I think that's everything. John Pollock and I had a conversation with Stephen P. New about the lawsuit involving AEW, where Kevin Kelly and the Tate Twins are suing AEW and Ian Riccaboni. You can check that out. That was recorded on Wednesday. And we'll be back this coming Wednesday on all free platforms for post-wrestling and WrestleNomics. And this program will be back next week for subscribers only at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. Thanks for listening, supporting, and subscribing. Talk to you next time.